Hannah Miller and Dr. Tony Bean.
Welcome into Wednesday. Hope you're having a great middle of the week, and we're glad that you decided to spend it with us. This is Tony Bean, Vice President for Student Life and Christian Worldview at North Greenville University, where Christ makes the difference. My co-host is Hannah Miller.
Outspokenly opinionated and unashamedly conservative, this is Hannah Miller, informed and unafraid.
I need you to add one more line
okay,
to your tag.
Okay, one more line?
Yeah.
All right.
Because just think about it.
I'll be ready tomorrow.
I can't quite get my sip of coffee down.
Oh, down.
And get my coffee
okay.
cup
well,
down
this
while you're doing
it. Quite anything, the turnaround, so because I've been harassed for not having it long enough.
But yeah, I got to thinking about it. I thought, no, that's my coffee sip moment. And it's not quite, I can't quite, you know, I'm rushed.
Well, I could wait a little bit before I say, like,
you never rush your coffee.
Yeah, that's true.
That could lead
it's supposed to
all
be a holy
of,
experience, is
could,
what I hear.
Bad,
you
bad
could say
things.
The beauty to the beast.
The beauty. Yeah.
I didn't ask you for help over there. I just
all right. I gotta go home.
The peanut gallery can stay over there where it belongs. I just was
thanks, Gary.
Simply trying to make a comment about my coffee drinking. Of course,
drink
it gets
coffee.
Turned on me somehow. This is not the Greenville Tea Party debate. I shouldn't have to be grilled on my own show. No, it was. I went last night. It was interesting. Well, they had a special question, actually several, for each of the candidates. So rather than, you know, like everybody up until this point really has just kind of thrown questions out there. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? Policy questions.
Right.
They only had six of the candidates. The top six, they did some kind of poll. I don't know how they picked them, actually. But in however they did, they had six of the candidates. And then some of the other, most of the other candidates were floating around in the audience. And they got to come up and make a statement. You know, I thought they were going to get together and storm the stage or something. I wanted to see some action.
You wanted to see some drama there?
But it didn't happen. They had the colonel there. He could have organized them and, you know, kind of taken the hill,
taking
so
the
to
hill
speak.
There. Yeah.
I'm not making fun of the colonel. I like Colonel Schmid. I like him. He was on the show. He's a great guy. Mm-hmm. And he's just, I mean, he sounds like a colonel. And I mean that.
Yeah, like he just sounds
compliment.
Like you would expect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Expect.
I mean, when he gets up there and speaks, you know, when he first starts talking, I feel like I ought to salute. I feel like I need to put my boots on. I need to, you know, I need to do something. Because he just sounds like he's calling people
to action,
to get with it.
Yeah.
So anyway, and I like the things he says. He's been a really fine candidate in this race. But anyway, he didn't make the top six. So the top six went at it last night. Lee Bright, who else is there? Bright, Brown, Epley, Kimbrell, Hamilton, and Timmons. One, two, three, four, five. Yeah, I think that's it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, they were. The questions that were tailored for them were pretty tough. They asked Timmons why he gave $1,000 to Lindsey Graham's reelection campaign. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, this is the Greenville Tea Party, right?
Right,
so,
right.
So, I mean, they had to repeat the first part of the question because once they said Lindsey Graham's name,
everybody
the
vomited
boos
a little bit.
Were, that's right. The boos were so loud that the rest of the question kind of got lost, you know?
Yeah.
And it was so funny. Do we need to read that question again? You know, and Timmons was, I mean, Timmons' answer was like, well, Wilkins asked me to come to an event, and when they ask you to come, you go and you give
and
money,
you
and you know, I was like, oh, my gosh. But, I mean, look, I'm not making fun of Timmons either. I'm just saying they all got tough questions, and they did the best they could with them. I mean, Lee Bright was asked about why his businesses failed, and, Josh was asked why he put – a bunch of bad stuff about Trump on Facebook, and why at some one point he was for an amnesty plan that was was going to be the Gang of Eight's plan to revamp immigration in the United States. So he and Josh gave some really good answers to both of those questions. And then Epley got asked about money that he owed some people that he hadn't paid back yet. Dan Hamilton was asked about, I was trying to remember, something about some of the votes that he had missed and some of the support that he had given candidates over time that was a little questionable. And let's see.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't even remember what he was asked. But
Well, how did you think it went personally? Like, who did you think personally kind of came out?
Well, it's the Greenville County Tea Party,
right.
So the most reaction last night was for Lee Bright.
Right.
And then he won the straw poll. So the straw poll results are Lee Bright got 58 votes. You got Bright with 58, Brown with 44, Epley with 42, Kimbrell with 36, and Hamilton with 22, and everybody, well, everybody else would have been Timmons. Timmons had not
nine,
a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. So, but again, Greenville County Tea Party, this kind of is in line, you know, Lee Bright was, that was kind of a home playing
deal.
But at the same time, he, you know, he got tough questions along with the rest of them.
And then I heard there was people coming in, they ran out of ballots and
they
stuff
did.
Like that. So
I
there's
was sitting
probably
at the back.
Some votes that weren't able to be counted as well.
Now, there were people that came in that were had Josh Kimbrell stickers on and they weren't able to get a ballot. They only handed them out. They're like, okay, we're going to hand them out now. And when we're through handing them out, we're not going to hand out anymore. And the reason was because when they were through handing them out, they ran out of them. They didn't have any more.
Yeah.
So I guess that sounded better than, sorry, we didn't print enough. Mm-hmm. But in any event, they got, you know, they did the thing last night. So how much impact does it have on the race? I don't know. I mean, I think the fact that it was broadcast on WORD and it's now recorded and it's live and it's up, you know.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I saw it this morning. I was scrolling through and I saw on the social media and on the news link that it was there. So it's already there if you want it.
Yeah. If you want to go back and watch it, you got a chance to do that. It was very different from the other candidate forums. This was
very personalized, it sounds like.
Well, and an interesting thing they did is they let each of the candidates ask another candidate a question.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they said, okay, what question do you have? And, you know, Josh was endorsed yesterday by Club for Growth. So they've come in, and for the next week, they're going to put some money in to support him. And which was a really big deal because Club for Growth is recognized as the fiscal conservative small government group in Washington. So some of the candidates, I think Dan Hamilton in particular, kind of tried to turn that into, okay, it's a special interest group that's supporting Josh Kimbrell. So when Josh had a chance to ask a question, he asked Dan Hamilton, why is the National Association of Realtors supporting you? Because they're a special interest group and they were against the Trump tax plan. And so Hamilton, you know, came back and said, look, these are good people who were fighting for mortgage deductions in the tax plan. And so, I mean, it was, you know, it was a debate. It was more of a classic debate. But one of the last questions they ask is, if you don't make it into the runoff, which two candidates would you support to be in the runoff?
Interesting.
And I thought that was interesting. I think Josh, I'm going to be careful here because I think, but I believe for Josh, it was Hamilton and Brown, and a couple of the candidates mentioned Josh that they would like to see. I think Hamilton mentioned him. Timmons picked two people that are not in the top tier. I mean, he picked two that were not on the platform. He picked, I think, the Colonel, and Lee Bright wouldn't pick two. Lee picked the Colonel, as Lee called it. So, you know, but it was, the format was, let me say this, it was not unfair. I don't want to leave you with the impression that the questions were unfair.
Yeah.
They were fair. They were on point. They were backed up with the facts. I mean, it was not.
It wasn't like they just pulled out some fake news questions or somebody made up a lie about them. And then they said, this is a legitimate concern. This is a legitimate question we have. And
they were tough questions, but they were fair questions.
Right.
And I didn't see anything wrong with those questions being asked, frankly. All right, Sandy's on the phone. Sandy, go.
Hi, good morning.
Hey.
Just a little bit of background on the forum last night.
Okay.
When it was first announced on WORD a couple of weeks ago, I did some research and some back and forth with the Greenville Tea Party. They tried to contact some 20,000 people, and only 1,100 responded. Out of those 1,100, 35% were undecided. So I think it was kind of, I understand they have to winnow it down, but I think it was kind of disrespectful to the so-called lower-tier candidates. I'm glad they were there and had a chance to make a statement.
Yeah.
But there's still 12 candidates in that race, and at 35% undecided.
Yeah, I wonder what
I just wasn't wild about it.
Do you know the percentage of, like, who got was the number one, did they announce that? Did they say, okay, 1 through 6, here they are, as far as the percentage? Because I'm curious.
They did, And right off the top of my head, I can't remember that. I shared it on my Facebook page.
Okay. All right.
But you can look it up. I researched it. I Googled the Greenville Tea Party poll or whatever.
Okay.
And it's out there.
Well, and I'm curious, do you remember if the top vote getter had more than 35%?
Absolutely not. 15%.
See, yeah. See, that's why that is interesting, because if the number of undecideds are greater than the number of the people who voted for the number one candidate, in other words, if the votes are evenly dispersed to the point that no one is greater than the undecideds, then that would suggest that the thing to do is to have all the candidates up there. I mean, to me.
Exactly.
But they wanted...
But their minds were made up. They were not budging on that at all.
Right, right. Well, thanks, Sandy. I appreciate the call. Here we go. This is the poll. Let's see. Well, you could have told us.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know if you were going to go.
Let's see. Raw votes. Lee Bright got 175 in the poll that decided who the top six.
Yeah, I received this poll actually. I voted.
Let's see. Lee Bright, then Dan Hamilton, then William Timmons, then Josh Kimbrell, and let's see how close it was. Oh yeah, between Hamilton, Timmons, and Kimbrell, Hamilton had 105, Timmons 99. And Kimbrell had 98. Yeah. So they were all bunched together. And then the top vote
getter was 175. Well, and they were last night, too, in the poll last night.
Yeah.
There was only, 4 to 6 points or votes between all of them.
Yeah.
So, Timmons was on the bottom, but between Hamilton, Kimbrell, and Epley.
Epley was close, too. Stephen Brown had 65, so he was the furthest back, but Epley had 87, so he was right up there. The next one, number 7, was Shannon Pierce. But she only had 29 votes. So there's a pretty good drop between Stephen Brown and Shannon Pierce. And then Mark Burns had 22, Claude Schmid had 17, Dan Albert had 13, John Marshall Mosser had 12, Justin David Sanders had 6, it looks like, and then undecided was 395. So that's out of 1,123 ballots.
I've had a lot of people. That doesn't surprise me. I've had a lot of people asking, what are we going to do about this? And it really, I think for a lot of people, it's coming down to Stephen Brown or Josh Kimbrell, actually, which has been very interesting.
Well, I hear that. I hear that a lot. So, I don't know. It's hard to have a read on it.
It really is hard. Well, and with so many undecideds,
it's going to be interesting to see the impact of Club for Growth's influence coming in, because that's a major endorsement. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest endorsement in this race, I would have to say. So anyway, all right, let's take a break. My goodness, we're way over. We're going to have a really short segment next time. We've got a special guest this morning. We'll tell you more about that when we come back. Stay with us.
And here are your hosts, Hannah Miller and Dr. Tony Bean.
All right, I'm confused.
What's new?
Well, I know. It's kind of a regular state of mind over here. But Kelly Sadler, she's gone out of the White House. Did you hear this yesterday?
I did not hear. Well, I heard some rumoring, but...
Well, no. It's she's gone.
Okay.
So this is cut number 3. This is from Fox News, so we'll give you the story. And then I have a question to ask, because here we go.
Kelly Sadler was at least the head of surrogate communications here at the White House, got into a controversy in a meeting, she said, about John McCain, well, he's dying anyways. The White House refused to apologize. Kelly Sadler refused to apologize. In the wake of that, we are told tonight by senior administration officials that Kelly Sadler is no longer with the White House.
Yeah, here's my confusion. I thought she did apologize.
She
called Meghan McCain. Because I went and looked up the story, but it said that it didn't go well. Well, then an aide told Meghan McCain that Kelly Sadler would make a public apology, and she never made a public apology, and neither did the White House. So people are speculating that maybe...
I thought Sarah Sanders came out and...
Well, I don't know what Sarah...
Said something about it.
Yeah, but I don't think Meghan... I don't know. Sarah Sanders didn't apologize.
No. Yeah, but I thought she addressed it.
But I don't think Kelly Sadler ever. I think she was supposed to follow up on this and didn't. Mm. And people are speculating that that's why she's out. Mm. But I have no idea.
Interesting. I hadn't.
Know, I was just.
I mean, I thought all of that had blown over, and everybody was just like, okay, yeah,
everybody's
she apologized. She called her and apologized, and
people were, you know, like for a couple of weeks after that, that every press conference they'd be hammering Sarah Sanders.
That's still been a few weeks ago. I mean,
yeah, I know. And then it kind of died out, and then now she's gone. Of course, we don't know. They'll be asking Sanders about that today at her press conference. Yesterday, they basically said the press called Sanders a liar. Here's the deal. She came out and said that Donald Trump Jr. wrote his own statement about what happened at Trump Tower, you know, the meeting. And now we find out through a couple of leaks that President Trump actually wrote that for him. So that's that's why the press was asking her, because she came out and made the announcement.
Right.
They asked her, they grilled her, you know, isn't it true that President Trump wrote this for his son? And she's like, no, you know, she was saying what she was told to say, the information she was given. And it turns out now that it looks like that Trump really did write that statement. So that was not a true statement, apparently. And so they went after her, and I thought she answered pretty well. This is cut number six. This is from the press conference yesterday when she was responding to reporters' questions about her integrity.
Frankly, I think my credibility is probably higher than the media's. And I think that in large part, that's because you guys spend more of your time focused on attacking the president instead of reporting the news. I think that if you spent a little bit more time reporting the news instead of trying to tear me down, you might actually see that we're working hard trying to provide you good information and trying to provide that same good information to the American people.
Okay. Slam dunk. I think that's true. Look,
I mean, that's the best you can do, because she just has to tell what she's told to say. She's the press secretary.
Right. They give her information.
And they
tell her things. This is the parameters. I mean, they give her parameters that she can talk about. And she goes out there and gives them the information. And, you know, if they give her something that's incorrect,
it's unfair to say Sarah Sanders is a liar. It might have been Sarah Sanders. Somebody misinformed Sarah Sanders is really the better way to have said that. But to call her integrity into question and say she's a liar and attack her on it.
The bottom line is the press doesn't like her.
Right.
I mean, they don't like her. They want to. They go after her sometimes in a way that's disrespectful. They make fun of her looks. They make fun of her family. And all of that ought to be out of bounds, quite frankly. All right, Andy's on the phone. Andy, go.
Hey, good morning. Just real quick, I was watching News 4 last night. They did a fact check on John Warren. I guess Templeton has run an ad saying he's not Second Amendment, pro-Second Amendment. And they did a fact check, shared it on the news, and just reported that was, you know, an untrue statement, that he has a great rating from the NRA, and that he is 100% pro-Second Amendment. So I just wanted to share that, because you hear all these ads and you wonder what's true, what's not. News 4 fact-checked it last night and shared that Templeton was untrue in her ad.
Did you hear the interview that I had with John the other day? He came back.
I did.
I thought he was, you know, I asked him all those questions. And I pressed him a little bit on the pro-life question and the Second Amendment question, and he was very forthright about it. The thing about this, Andy, with candidates that have not served in office before, I mean, you really don't have a track record. I mean, you can't go back and say, well, wait a minute, you say that you're pro-Second Amendment, you say that you're pro-life, but look at this voting record. Well, he doesn't have a voting record, so we're going on statements that he has made, but all of the statements that he has made and the commitments that he has made and the surveys that he's filled out and all of that points to him being pro-Second Amendment and pro-life. With, you know, he gave the only exception, which was the life of the mother, and that is, as I said, it was a theologically acceptable exception, because you're talking about life versus life in that instance. So I thought John did a great job, and I think he's going to be in a runoff. I really do.
I did as well, and I think some people have an issue. I don't personally have an issue, especially when you've got somebody doing this for the first time, and they're asked a question that they truly may not have pondered or have thought about. So when somebody says they're pro-Second Amendment, the question he's got is, what's your stance on open carry? And he said, haven't thought about it, need to give that some thought before I answer. And I think that's a perfectly acceptable answer on some of these issues that a new candidate or even myself, if somebody asks me a question I haven't thought about, it's not smart for me to give an answer without first thinking about it. And and that's what he said, was that, hey, I need to give that some thought. And then that was in a Facebook, you know, comment. And then he's come back, you know, and said, hey, I've thought about it, and I'm pro open carry. And so I don't, you know, when somebody has to say, well, I need to give that some thought, I actually like that answer because, you know, you're trying to figure out what's best for a country, a state, a district versus saying what's best for me, you know, and I like that answer, and I wouldn't, you know, hold it against him, but some have tried to do that.
Oh, yeah. Well, believe me, they're trying everything right now, because we're talking about a guy that went from 1% in the polls to 20% plus in a matter of weeks, and we could have the makings of a Nikki Haley story going on here. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see if he gets in the runoff what happens, and I think there's a good chance that Warren's going to pass Templeton and get into the runoff. Now, that may not happen. Templeton, the last polling data that we had, she's about 5 points ahead. That's not a comfortable lead. That, I mean, you got a margin of error, probably 3.5%, and then you only got a 5-point lead. So this thing could go the other way. All right, Andy, thanks. I appreciate the call. Appreciate you clarifying that for us. We're going to take a break, and then we've got Tony Gilliard is in the studio with us. He's going to be talking about his candidacy coming up. We've got a lot of candidates on this week. We want to give them a chance to talk about what they stand for. Stay with us. We'll be back.
And now here's your host, Dr. Tony Beam.
All right, welcome back. We have Tony Gilliard in the studio with us today. He is a House District 18 candidate. He's running against Tommy Stringer, who is the incumbent. Are there other people in the race?
Just us two in this race.
Just the two of you? Okay. All right. I just haven't followed that as much as I should. And it's but anyway, that's so Tony Gilliard and Tommy Stringer. And Hannah's going to ask you just a couple of questions about your background.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to ask you about your family and who you are, and just have you share with our listeners a little bit about you.
Well, I was born in St. Francis Hospital in Greenville, South Carolina, 1960. My wife was born in Allen Bennett in Greer. We raised our children, Zane and Lauren Gilliard, both born in Allen Bennett, the old one, and were graduates of Greer High School. I have moved around my life, and I worked in construction. I'm a residential builder, and worked in construction in Cashers, so I moved up to Mountain Rest, that's north of Wahala, for a few years. But I'm local, and I was raised, my father is a Pentecostal preacher, and so I have that deep understanding of the Christian faith and consider myself a Christian. And pray to Jesus Christ every morning for wisdom, especially this morning.
Now, well, listen, you decided to get in the race. I was reading some of your comments here at the Greenville News, and you made the statement that you're running as a platform Republican. So sort of expand on that. What does it mean to be a platform Republican?
I have heard nobody claim this other than me, but the South Carolina Republican Party platform is only about 30 pages, and it is such a great standard, the document. It's anyone can read it, and it just, the meaning, a lot of people claim they're Republicans, claim they're conservative Republicans and this and that, but the traditional Republican values are covered in the South Carolina Republican Party platform. And my reading it over the last few years and spending time at Greenville County Council, I'd go to Greenville County Council and just read sections of the platform and remind the 10 of 12 people, look, this isn't going to pass because 10 of you are Republicans. Well, not to say it passed anyway, but various issues, but the platform is the standard, and you can read it.
Well, it does seem like people have gotten away from that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you would think that as Republicans, first of all, every Republican who runs for office would know the platform and that they would make some type of commitment to follow it, because this is, as Republicans, this is what we agree about. One of the issues, of course, is the size and scope of government. Republicans have been for limited government for a long time. And that's one of the issues that you say you want to address if you get to go to Columbia. So
yes,
give us an example of what limited government would look like if you were in the House and what you would be fighting for.
Well, I'll try to avoid Tonytopia, which is everybody has their own.
Right.
But the government, even at the state level, there's so much social engineering. Diversity is being brought into the intricate parts of everybody's life. And when a Republican raises taxes, like my opponent pushed for 5 years to raise the gas taxes, and when a Republican raises taxes, to me they're saying that the scope of government, the social engineering, gentrification, affordable housing, the government's involvement in the economy and the central planned economy, even at the state and local levels, they're accepting that all of that is fine for the government to do, so we need to raise money by raising taxes to do the core functions of government. I do not believe that the core function of government should be tourism advertisements and such. And I understand people want recreation and tourism, and we need it in South Carolina. But roads and infrastructure would be a priority over new parks and new buildings and such. So
in other words, you want to redefine what the legitimate function of government is at the core. Because a legitimate function of government is not to invite people to come to Myrtle Beach. There are plenty of independent groups that could do that to promote tourism, but the state of South Carolina, that's not a government function. But roads, infrastructure, taxes, those things would be a legitimate function of government.
Yes, sir. Yes, okay. Sir. I mean, the people are going to come. You hear the number. They'll throw out the number of total tourism dollars, for instance, and this is a return on our investment. Well, the Chamber of Commerce should do this, but it seems like the Chamber can invest, you know, a couple hundred grand in politicians and get a return of 500 thousand or millions of dollars in tourism advertising through the state, and it's a good idea. It goes back to Tocqueville. Do we want it? Do we want it done? Yes. Do we want the government to do it? No.
Yeah.
The government should do what it's supposed to do.
Right. Be involved in the things that constitutionally the government in South Carolina is given,
yes,
certain,
sir,
responsibilities, and they should stay within that, in other words.
Yes, sir.
All right, transparency. You talk about that, and particularly as it relates to the gas tax. Now, you were, and talking about Representative Stringer, pushing for the gas tax. So were you opposed to the gas tax?
And yes, sir.
Okay, what would be your solution for roads in South Carolina? Because we obviously have a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. What we need to do in... And the bureaucracy in Columbia needs to be corrected. The Department of Transportation and the secretaries and such in that department should come under the governor as a cabinet agency. And, of course, this reform allegedly was part of the gas tax. So they work and they compromise, but it just doesn't happen. The money... It is laundered and filtered through the state infrastructure bank with so much of the property taxes and such that it has to go through this sieve and then it trickles back down and it happens.
Right.
So they're fixing some roads. but they were fixing roads before. And what a lot of times people don't realize, the local government fund, for instance, started not coming back in 9 or 10, and Greenville County Council cut their road paving money drastically over those 2 years in 10. And by 12, they were down to $7 million in road paving. So, you know, four or five years later, we're stuck with crumbling bridges and roads, and the result is, hey, let's raise our taxes.
So, well, let me ask you if this would fit. Are you saying that there's money in the government in South Carolina to work on the roads, but that money gets diverted?
Yes, sir.
And it gets used for other projects, and so we end up with a roads problem. So rather than raising taxes, let's reform the system by which the roads get paved, and then we should be able to find the money necessary over a period of time to fix the roads without having to raise people's taxes.
Would that be a fair statement? Yes, sir. Absolutely. Okay. I believe if when I get to Columbia, that we can form a coalition or a caucus of like-minded, liberty-minded, limited government representatives and be able to force some change in how the system works.
Yeah.
Many of us believe there's a legislative form of government in Columbia, and it needs to be a Republican form of government. So much is done behind the doors in committees, and then by the time it gets to the floor, you know, the vote's already been decided.
Yeah, it is kind of amazing. If you've ever been down there and sat in the gallery for a little while, you know, I've seen in the House in particular this happen. There'll be a guy over here drinking coffee. There's a guy sitting over here reading the paper. There's two or three people standing around having a conversation. And whoever is, you know, the House Republican chair, he steps up and gavels and says, okay, on the matter before us, and he rattles it off. The ayes are so many. Everybody who's in favor say aye. Everybody's in favor as opposed say nay. The ayes have it. Bang. He bangs again. And nobody moved. I mean, it was like he called for a vote. And I mean, I saw it happen several times where – there wasn't even a flinch. The guy reading the paper didn't even switch to another page, you know. and then all of a sudden, the chair says, okay, the ayes have it. And I ask about that. I said, how in the world is this? Nobody voted on anything. All the votes were taken before he ever went to the floor. So
it's
we knew
like
what
a
the
consent yeah. agenda.
Really?
It's yeah. just listed, and then there's no objection. Okay. All of this passes.
I mean, I get efficiency and number of votes, but you know what? I'm kind of in favor of people having to step up in public and say, this is where I stand. And then, you know, there can be some accountability, but there's very little accountability attached to votes that are taken in that manner that I just described.
We have some of those folks in Columbia, and they need help.
Yeah.
They need someone to come join them.
Well, we're going to take a break and we'll come back. I want to ask you a couple of social questions, just some social issues that, you know, the pro-life questions, marriage, family, Second Amendment, those kind of things. We'll discuss that when we return. We're talking to Tony Gilliard. He is a candidate for the House Republican seat here in South Carolina, District 18. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
And now here are your hosts, Hannah Miller and Dr. Tony Beam.
All right, I just found out that Governor McMaster is going to join us here in a little bit.
So oh, okay.
He's either, I think he's going to be probably on the phone with us in about an hour, coming up about 8:30, actually, between 8:30 and 8:45. So we'll look forward to that because they're kicking off their bus tour this morning. And I think before that, as they get on the bus, he's going to give us a call and talk about what some of the issues he's going to be dealing with. But right now we're talking to Tony Gilliard, and we're glad to have him in the studio. He's running for District 18 here in the Upstate, running against an incumbent, Tommy Stringer. I wanted to ask you about just your stand on, obviously, folks listening to this program, Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah, they're concerned about life and people's commitment in government to protect life. Where do you fall on that issue?
Absolutely pro-life. You mentioned McMaster's. I don't have the name in front, but last year, he issued an executive order to not fund abortion facilities.
Right.
And I'm not sure that it is being adhered to. In fact, the budget that will be voted on here directly is probably going to continue to fund the South Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, for instance, which launders Medicaid money from the federal government through to, we'll use Planned Parenthood, the name.
Right.
But there's other facilities that perform abortions. I have made the commitment, as long as this department is funded and this money is going to these facilities that perform abortion, I will not vote for any budget that includes that, primarily because in my feeling, you are complicit. If you pay the rent on a building that abortion is taking place, or if you pay the power bill, you're complicit in that. So yeah. I've made this commitment, and I wonder, and it's up in the air. The budget is still up in the air in South Carolina this year. So I wonder if my opponent will adhere to that. He is pro-life also, but you know, government shouldn't be funding this. I mean, you can work towards overturning Roe v. Wade or nullifying it at the state, but right now, government shouldn't be funding Planned Parenthood. And if they miss one check from the government, I believe it'll make national news, and it hasn't made national news, so I think they're still getting funded. I'm pro-life.
Where, as you look at this issue, so if in the state house, for example, a bill that would ban dismemberment abortions, you would vote to ban dismemberment abortions. You would vote to, if life, a bill that said that life begins at conception. So whatever would come through or across your desk in the legislature that pertained to the protection of the unborn, you would be in favor.
Yes, sir. Yes, okay. Sir. Absolutely.
Right. Now, you probably are doing a lot of door-to-door, I mean, out talking to the people.
Yes, sir.
When you talk to them, what are some of the things that they say to you that they're concerned about in South Carolina government?
Surprisingly, it's a mix. A lot of people will say the same things that they hear on the radio, and mm-hmm. our roads and bridges are crumbling and this and that.
Right. Is there a concern about the corruption? I mean, we just had John Corson, Senator Corson, for example. They were about to have a trial that would determine whether or not he misused campaign funds. And, right as on the day the trial was to begin, he pled guilty, cut some kind of a deal with the prosecutor, and resigned from office. And we're not going to know about his sentencing until after this case has played out. In other words, information that the prosecutor is getting from him is probably going to be used against others in Columbia. And there's been a lot of question raised about how much corruption is actually going on down in the state house. So do you hear a lot of comments in the community about that, and are
yes.
you concerned about it?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. The ethics of it is a big issue with
yeah.
A lot of people. They do bring that up, and what are we going to do about it? There's a lot of various bills, but from my experience with this, the ethics department seems to be on top of everything. You don't know. Bobby Harrell had a PAC, and he was a great donor to that PAC. Donated to my opponent,
uh-huh.
Michael Reardon, and the Greenville Hospital System donated to my opponent. So there's a lot of special interests, and there's a lot of donations, and maybe there's things that we don't know about, like Corson. What are they talking about that?
Right.
He actually did wrong, because obviously you can't claim it on your financial reports with the ethics
right.
building. So
now your campaign, is it being funded primarily just by folks that are...
My wife,
yeah.
No, we're most of it. My neighbor helped me a lot. If you're looking at numbers of dollars, my campaign isn't... it doesn't have a lot of money,
right.
but... It's primarily on substance. I mean, you can read what I post, and it's
right.
And it's about substance as opposed to just the conservative
right.
Republican talking points.
Yeah, it's about mm. Well, you've got some very good points about government transparency, about limited government, about ethics in government. I mean, those are the things that, you're hearing, and I think those are things that you said that you're going to address.
I would love to see the taxes and fees at the pump to show up on the receipts for everybody to know they're paying 37 cents every gallon. They look around, there's 10 cars, all of them are paying 37 cents a gallon to maintain our roads.
Yeah, and we have to keep our receipts if we want to get that money back.
Figure it out from
it's
there.
It's a little bit frustrating. All right, Tony, thanks. I appreciate you coming and taking
Thank
some
you
time
so
today.
Much.
It was great to have you
Tony
on the show.
Tony Gilliard, District 18.
District 18, Tony Gilliard. It's a week from yesterday, so we're down to it. We're under a week now. Fox News is next.